We're going to call this meeting to order for the Carson City Advisory Board for the Division of Wildlife. Okay, shall we all stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, please? Oh, roll call. This is my first time in the seat, so.
Chairperson Green.
Here.
Vice Chair Yannick.
Here.
Member Beamer. Member Martin. Member Stewart.
Here, present.
The quorum's present.
Thank you. Now we can stand for the pledge.
Pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, at this time, the public is invited to comment or discuss any topics that may be relevant to the advisory board, and no further action at this point will be taken.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, C.K. Bailey, Carson City. And all the other board members appreciate what you do as always. Okay. Saturday, Cinco de Mayo, will be the kids' fishing day at Bailey Pond, and it's going to be run by Vince Lopresti. He is absolutely just tearing this thing up, so if you've got kids, if you know kids, I'm taking that out to the public. If you think you know kids, if you know parents that have kids, please let them know that there's going to be just an incredible amount of fun. There's going to be archery, fish painting, gyotaku, Japanese fish painting, gyotaku. Yeah, it's a big hit, actually. And, of course, there's fishing. And Dow will be there. If you don't have a rod, one will be supplied to you, meaning your kid. If you don't have bait, that'll be supplied, too. It's all supplied, and it's all free. It is truly a free fishing day. Okay, if you're 12 and older, you will need a Nevada license, a fishing license, and trout stamp. But the way things are now, I think that's all one and the same, so which is really handy. Last but not least, switching gears, I'm always open to hearing about what's going on with the road to Hobart, Ash Canyon. So if there's any information on that, always enjoy hearing about it. And so, Mr. Chairman, Chairman Green, and Vice Chair, and Advisory Board members, thank you so much for this opportunity to speak with you and have this public time. Thanks again. Any questions?
Just a comment. Thank you, CK, for all you do regarding the annual youth fishing. And thank you again.
Thank you. I'm Jim Davis representing the Clear Creek Bowman, and I just have some questions on what's going on in our local areas here. I don't know if you want to wait till Carl gets here or go over it now, but in area 192, there's been an increase in the rifle tags and a decrease in the archery tags, and I'd like to get a little input on that. And something that is not might be indirectly related. I have some questions on the new shed hunting regulations, and it doesn't really affect this area directly, but indirectly. Like I'm a shed hunter. I know lots of shed hunters in this area that go to these areas, and this is what is in the the regulations right now, and I'll read it real quickly. The Nevada Board of Wildlife Commissions has approved a new regulation that prohibits the taking or gathering of shed antlers from public land in Elko, Eureka, Lander, Lincoln, Nye, or White Pine counties from January 1st to April 30th each year. But there's, and that's the extent of what they had. They don't, I keep hearing things like there's going to be a fee. I'm just wondering if there's going to be a non-resident fee, a resident fee, if there's going to be a difference in that, or is this going to be covered under your hunting license? And so anyway, I have these questions, and there's not much input in the new regulations, and it is this is what is in the new regulations, and it's a little bit vague, or a lot vague, and it doesn't really cover everything I think we need to know. And anyway, I was looking for some information on that. Anyway, that's all I have for right now.
I don't think we know any more than you do. Yes, it's vague because it's in its formative stage, because the situation, as was explained at one of the last commission meeting, was that it's getting to the point where people feel it's somewhat dangerous to the herd. I mean, we got people chasing them on all kinds of, either by foot or by ATVs, trying to get them to run through the trees and rip off the antlers. I mean, that's been going on for a long time, and the fact that they're trying to control that by, in certain counties where it's really a big business. I have not heard that that's one of the alternatives that they're going to try to push. You know, we're looking for people who have hunting licenses to be out there. Right now, you don't have to have any type of license whatsoever. You can be out there in the time periods other than what's specified, you know, that you can collect sheds. Other than that, you know, we're trying to keep it as reasonable. I think the department is trying to keep it as reasonable as possible, but trying to make sure that the commercialization, the people who do it because they're collecting it and they build light fixtures, all kinds of things that they sell, you know, to a minimum. I mean, we're not the only state that has this problem. We just happen to have a great herd of elk,
right,
and deer, and people, you know, favor collecting them and selling them, and it's a big business. It really is, and because it's getting so commercialized, it's getting to the point where it's dangerous out there at times. Yes.
If I might, I might help you out a little bit on this, Jim. This regulation, I believe, was brought forth at the request of the chairman and of the CAB over in Lincoln County, and you might know Cody Lytle over there. I'm sure you do. You have cousins everywhere. But it came about as a real issue, as I know you're aware, and you're asking, what is this going to evolve and morph into? There are no plans that I'm aware of or that the department is as far as a fee on this, but it was written and it's being championed at the department by law enforcement, and that's Tyler Turnipseed, and I have a card here for Jake Kramer, who's our local game warden. And you might ask him if law enforcement has any plans in the future to come back with questions on that, if you'd like Jake's phone number. But there's nothing on the horizon that the CAVs are aware of regarding fees. So more information, if you would like, I have Jake's card right here.
All right. And then do you have any information on the 192 deer?
Well, we actually, that's an agenda item, and it will be on the consent calendar under item 9D. And I will be pulling that item, and I see that we do have the biologist for 192 is sitting right behind you now. And so we'll be able to ask those questions. But I believe, and I don't want to speak for Carl, but I believe it's going to come into play the demand function that has to do with why rifle tags go up and archery tags go down. But we'll let the, if you don't mind, we'll
no,
get
I don't
into
mind
that.
At all.
We'll get into that in the agenda under 9D.
Okay.
Thanks for bringing that forward.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate those comments, too. And thank you, the two of you. Need an approval for the minutes of the meeting on March 12th. Do I have a first on that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'll make a motion to accept the minutes as presented.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Pass. Now we have adopt our agenda for tonight. Do we have first on that?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Chairman. No, you got a promotion.
Yeah. The people sitting up here.
I'm taller.
Yes. I'd like to make a motion to accept the agenda as submitted.
I'll second.
All in favor, say aye.
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 Thank you, and the motion passes. Okay, do we have any informational disclosures tonight on any of the agenda items?
I just nope. Have to confine to conflicts.
Okay.
None?
Okay, now we're up to the our budget item for approval. Has everybody had a chance to look it over for our budget for this following year?
This coming year?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, basically it's pretty straightforward with regards to the preparation. It's mostly based on where the meetings are going to be held, and your handouts indicate where the various meetings are going to be. We normally fill in who will attend, are they staying overnight, principal method of travel, are they going to rent a car, are they going to have to park a car at the airport if they're going to fly to Las Vegas, something like that. And the rest of it's, you know, It's pretty straightforward, and the program that we developed some time back makes it real easy for each of the counties to put together their budget based on where the meetings are, where they're starting from, how many people, and how many nights they're staying. I'd be glad to answer any questions that anybody on the board has regarding the preparation or the numbers that were developed through the process.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I have one question. Gil, how does this budget how does this budget compare to the previous year's
last
budget?
Year, it's a little bit more because of where the meetings are going to be held. You have a meeting in Caliente. You have another meeting, Hawthorne. And the typical two to Las Vegas. So there's a little more travel involved in this one than last year. I should have brought a copy of last year's. I'm sorry I didn't. It's within a couple of $100.
Okay. I have a copy of last year's, if you'd like, okay?
No, Mr. Chairman, I've looked at the budget, and I think it's very reasonable, and I'd like to move to approve the budget as prepared, and thank Gil for, and you for working on that.
Do I have a second?
Mr. Chairman, I'll second.
All in favor, say aye.
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 No opposed. Thank you. I do want to thank Gil, too, because I had very little to do with this. I asked a few questions, and that was it. And Gil did the work on it. I was, and he was very helpful in pointing me in the directions to look for these things online, too. Thank you.
Right. The other thing that I would like to bring up, I sent you all an email today with a updated expense report taking into account the latest per diems as recommended by the GSA office. And I've kind of combined, we used to have two separate sheets depending on where the meeting was going to be held. The current one is developed so that all you got to do is put in where you're going, and it takes into account the various changes in the maximum amount for hotels, the mileage, and things like that. So it's pretty straightforward, and if anybody has a question about it or once they start using it, you know, if you find something that doesn't compute properly, please let me know. You know, these things, you know, sometimes you miss a comma or a plus sign or a parentheses, it doesn't compute properly. Yeah. So I'm looking for anything I may have missed, but I think you'll find it pretty easy to deal with. And if you have any questions, you can always get hold of me, and we'll work it out.
Thank you, Gil.
Okay.
Okay, now we're up to item 8, update on the activity report on the Carson City Urban Wildlife Committee. Any comments on that?
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to point out that the department has taken over a large functionality on this, and they've been updating their urban wildlife program. They have a specialist, and Carl, help me out if I say this wrong. I believe it's Jessica Hyatt. Height, okay. And she's been doing a great job in keeping us informed, and you can reach their local information through NDAO's website through their urban wildlife program.
Thank you, Member Martin. Okay, item number 9. These items have been agendized hereafter as 9A through 9D and are consent agenda items. They are considered routine and may be acted upon by the Advisory Board to Manage Wildlife with one action and without extensive hearing. There will be no public comment unless the item is pulled. So I would like to know at this point how, if there are any items 9A through D that we would like to pull. And I believe there are.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to pull for further discussion item 9D, the big game quotas for the 2018-19 season. And that's the only one I have, Mr. Okay. Chairman.
Any others? Okay, the others will be considered accepted as they are.
Mr. Chairman, I do believe we need to take an action.
So we have to make a vote on that?
What I propose is I will propose a motion if you would like.
Yes.
I propose that we support the items 9A, B, and C as staff proposed, as Department of Wildlife staff proposed.
I'll second.
All in favor, say aye.
Mr. Chairman, usually a protocol is to ask for further comments.
And do I need the public comment at that point?
You could ask for that.
Okay. Are there any further comments from the board? If not, are there any comments from the public on items A, B, and C? With no further comment?
Mr. Chair, can I just get the motion straight? So the motion is to accept all the consent agenda items except agenda item number 9D. Is that the motion?
That's correct.
That is correct.
Thank you. I just wanted to verify.
Yes. And we had a first and we had a second. Gil did, I think. Yes. And then all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Now, 9D. This is the regulation on the big game quotas for the 2018-19 season. Wildlife specialist Mike Cox, well, Mike, Pat, Cody, the two Codys, everybody's involved in this. Would you like to comment? Member Martin.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, may I suggest that we look at these based upon species, and I really don't have any concerns on most of the species quotas. Mm-hmm. I kind of have concerns about our own local herds, and that's mule deer. Mm-hmm. So perhaps you can run through this, because I do believe we have a form we have to submit to the department, and maybe we can just see if there's any interest. Well, my interest is mule deer, and we can maybe see if there's other interest among the board and among the public here.
Yeah, I think that's perfect, because we are the Carson City Advisory Board, and the areas that we are concerned with are 194, 192, 195, 291, everything local. We don't, and so do any of the other board members have an interest in any of the other species other than that? There's 46 different hunts on here. Nope. Should I go to the public now?
Yeah,
I will. Yeah, and now I need the public's comment on this part. Any public comment, Mr. Davis? You looked like you were ready.
Well. So, Jim, just to let you know, what we're talking about is we're going to talk about mule deer specifically, and now we're just wondering about other species. So if you have a question on other species.
Okay, well, I was just going to make sure that you addressed the area 192, the more rifle tags and less archery tags. That was my concern. Okay, and you'll address that.
Certainly. Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. So, Mr. Chairman, may I suggest, may I make a motion that the Carson City Advisory Board supports all of the quotas for all species except mule deer as proposed by the department biologists and their appropriate species and areas. So, Tamar, did you understand that?
Yep.
Okay.
Now, do we have to, can we take a vote on that?
We can.
Okay.
We need a second.
I need a second on Member Martin's proposal.
Mr. Chair, I'll second that.
Okay. Do we have a second? All in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed? None opposed. Okay. Can we have some more discussion on the mule deer?
Yeah, Mr.
Please.
Mr. Chairman, there is a reoccurring department proposal to reduce archery tags from the previous year, and it's and it doesn't have anything to do with them not liking archers. What it has to do with is it gets decreased because of a formula that they used, and I'd love to hear from biologist Lackey on how that formula works. And I believe the formula takes into account demand, and I can see that it's an 8-to-1 for rifle and a 2-to-1 for muzzle loaders, and there's your demand function. And then they come to us every year and say this is what the formula suggests, but what the quotas they're suggesting this year, they request an increase in the rifle tags, and they are requesting a decrease in the muzzleloader and the archery tags. And I'm talking mainly the areas that are around Carson City, and that would be the Pine Nuts, the Carson, and the Carson Range. And I think the numbers are 192, 194, and forgot the Pine Nuts.
291.
Right, right. So that's really my concern. Is I'm going to want to if the numbers support an increase in rifle tags, I'm in favor of that, but I'm not in favor of reducing archery tags at the same time and muzzleloader tags at the same time. And so if the herd can handle an increase in rifle tags, then we need to keep archery and muzzleloader commensurate with the number of tags going out to rifle hunters. So perhaps we can hear some more from biologist Lackey.
Could you enlighten us, please, Mr. Lackey?
So before you start, Carl, thank you for coming. And also, I read your report, and I do appreciate the effort you put into putting that down into paper in the Big Game Status Book. So thanks for coming, Carl.
You are absolutely correct.
Your mic is off.
Is that better?
That's better.
Oh, my gosh. Did you get everything up to that point? All right. For the record, Carl Lackey, Nevada Department of Wildlife. You are correct. We are bound to a certain degree by the demand success formulas. So as demand for one hunter user group, let's say archery, decreases or increases, let's say it increases demand, then that will tend to push more tags to account for that demand. But success also comes into play. So if archery seasons, let's say the late season archery in 192, 194, which is typically pretty high, if the hunters do really good and high hunter success, that will drop the tags for the following year. We're managing 192 for a post-hunt, which means after the end of the season, a buck ratio of 30 bucks per 100 does. So to achieve that next year, we have to kill so many bucks. So we use that demand success ratio, or the success rates, to determine how many tags will be allocated to each of those user groups. And I'm not advocating one way or the other, but it is kind of a slippery slope when you have, I tend to think that when somebody looks at that application book and sees that, okay, there's only 6 archery tags for this unit that I want to hunt, I don't have a chance, I'm not going to apply for that. Well, that in turn affects the demand for that hunt, and it may cause fewer tags just to constantly be going down because guys look at that and don't want to put in for it. But we are bound by that to a certain degree. The other thing that comes to play, of course, is our annual surveys. We fly these deer herds usually twice a year, post-hunt, post-season survey, and then a spring survey. All that gets plugged into the model. That gives us our population estimates, our buck-to-doe ratios. Those go into those deer arrays where we type in the demand success ratios and the formulas, and that spits out a number. The other thing to remember is that these numbers are rounded. We started doing that a few years ago where if the model in the deer array says, okay, you need to issue 23 tags for that particular hunt, well, that's automatically rounded up to 25. So our recommendation shows up as 25, even though it may actually be 23. And it can go down. We can round down or we can round up, depending. And the other thing to keep in mind is that your decisions over the years can affect this. This is, when I look at last year's, let's say last year, 192 archery, for the early season archery, it was 20, and the late season was 20. Well, this year, the early season is going down to, for residents, the recommendation is 17, and the late archery stays at 20. But that 20 for those 2 years may not have been what we recommended last year. We may have came in with a recommendation of 15, and per your recommendation or the commission's prerogative, they may have said, let's keep it at 20 like it was the year before and the year before that, and they may have upped it. So this doesn't necessarily reflect our recommendations every year. What you're looking at is the approved, what was approved last year.
I have a question for you too. Now this is, a lot of this is new with the new online system that Endow has brought up. It's possible for hunters to change locations. Does this upset your algorithms in any manner?
What do you mean by allows them to change locations?
As I understand it, as I understood it, if you put in for a certain area, but later find that you can't hunt that area, you can change it up to a certain point, but not after a certain date. Is that correct, or was I misunderstanding what I was told?
I would imagine you could change your application up until the deadline for the application deadline, but Once those apps are in, once that deadline is hit, you can't change.
Only up to the deadline, so that doesn't affect your algorithms at all. Then.
No.
Okay, that was my question. Okay.
And I can tell you that the deer herd along the Carson Front, 192 all the way up to Peavine, they've been stable for several years. They appear stable right now. The entire population is estimated in 192 at around 1,400. You know, that's a range. If there's a range, it's probably 1,100 to 1,500 or 1,600. But the and the 194, 196, same thing. That population estimate is in that 1,900 range. Those estimates have been fairly stable. We've had some decent winters. We've had really good spring precipitation for the last several years, which is really beneficial to mule deer. Mild winters, you know, fawn survival has been generally good. We haven't had major fires in any of those areas. So the population has been pretty stable. When you look at the big game status book, and I answer this question every year, so I'll just preempt by saying it, the number that you see in there when it talks about a population estimate toward the back of that book in the appendix is the what is estimated to be the Nevada portion of that population. Now, what I started doing this year, and this is just kind of anecdotal, but last year, rather than every year up until last year when I flew my postseason, I waited until the last archery season was over. So I wouldn't fly until the first week or so in January. Now, that with all the mule deer collaring data that we've been accumulating the last several years, we know that the migration from upper elevations in the Tahoe Basin, Hope Valley, et cetera, they're moving down into the Nevada winter ranges typically around mid-December every single year. So when I counted them in toward the end of January, or the beginning of January, we were getting a lot of those migrating deer in our estimates. So this year, I'm trying to tease that apart. I'm trying to tease apart the resident herd, the resident numbers of deer that we have, because those are really the ones that we're hunting, right? August, September, October, November, November rifle hunt, those are all resident deer for the most part. Really, the only deer that we're hunting that are migratory are the late season December archery hunts. So I've been trying to tease that apart. So this year I flew on December 1st, which was prior to that main migration, and then we flew very, very early April, which is typically after they migrate back. So after a few years, we'll have some trends to look at, but. Trying to tease apart those numbers, resident deer from migratory deer. And I will say, December 1st, opening day of archery season, there's nothing we can do. We flew over a couple of archery hunters that weren't too happy with the helicopter, but we got to fly at some point, and that's just the way it goes.
Question. Seeing that you're trying to tease out that data, can you tease us with any ideas on what you're seeing, resident versus total with the migrants in it?
Well, I don't have numbers right now, but my feeling is that the majority of the deer, when we say a population estimate of 1,100 to 1,400, what I'm seeing is the majority of those deer are probably resident deer, and that we're probably right on with our quotas.
Okay. Great.
But it'll, several years of looking at that, and if I can get that survey timing down that same period every single year for several years in a row, that'll really help.
Couple questions then, Carl. I'm looking at the proposed 2017 numbers, and the department proposed 10, and you came here, and we then suggested what would happen if we made it 20, and that's what got recommended to the department, and that's what got voted on, and that's what got approved.
You're talking archery.
I'm talking archery. Okay. So this year it's proposing archery again at 10, and what I'm going to ask you then is, it went from your recommendation of 10 to 20.
I'm looking at 17 as the proposed.
I'm looking at 17 proposed.
Okay, I'm sorry, you said 10, so.
There were 10 in 17.
Oh, in 2017.
Yeah,
this
in
year
17 there were 10 proposed.
This year there's 17 proposed.
Well, actually, for the early, is it 17?
I have 17 resident and 2 non-resident in the
right,
early.
Right, so it's actually 15. The 17 became a 15 then.
Yeah, okay.
Right. So what I'm seeing is 15, what you're, yeah, and then you round up or down.
Yeah.
Right. So what I want to know is, when you increased it to the 20, and we harvested, actually they had a good harvest last year on archery of 7. Does that harvest of 7, did it have any impact on your buck to doe ratios? Is that harvest of 7 detrimental in any way? Is it biologically supportable, that harvest of 7? Do you have a concern with that harvest of 7? See where I'm going with that?
Yeah, no, I don't. No, I don't have a concern with it.
You don't have a concern with that harvest of
7?
No. Okay.
No. Okay. Not when we have a population of around 1,400 animals. No.
Right. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I don't think Mr. Lackey will. I know he's constrained by what he can do with his formulas. And that's why we are here, is to make adjustments to those formulas, not the formulas, but to the recommendations. And I'd love to hear from the public, but I do have a motion I'd like to make regarding both archery and muzzleloaders. But lastly, before I go off of that, this topic, Carl, on the rifle, you're proposing to increase the number of rifle tags this year versus last year. And I'm just wondering if that is just really a function of the herd being able to sustain a larger harvest, or is that a function of demand, or is it both?
That's demand success. Yeah, the archery was recommended coming down a little bit. Rifle recommended going up a little bit.
All based on demand success. None of that has, none of, if we tweak this 5 or 10 either way, it's not going to have an impact on the biology of the herd. Is that correct?
Not this year, no. But as I cautioned before, if we tweak it every single year, year after year after year, then I may come to you in 5 years or 10 years and say, look, we're recommending cutting these tags in half, and you really need to stick with it this time because of this. But right now, the population is stable. We've seen good hunter success rates in most of those areas. I'm looking at the 192 early archery was 35%. The late archery was only 16. Last year it was a little bit higher. But when you look at 4 points or better, which are the mature bucks, 3 or 4 points, but 4 points or better has been very consistent over the years in the Carson range. The 10-year average, I think, is 39% of the deer that are harvested are 4 points or better. Last year in 192, we were at about 35%. So we're right in there with that 10-year average. That's been consistent. Hunter success has been good. It's been consistent. The population's been stable. So it's hard to argue that we need to make major changes to the quotas.
Great. Thank you very much. Well, Mr. Chairman, if you don't mind, I know there's a couple of people here from the public who have some things to say about this particular topic, so, and these particular herds. So maybe we could hear from them first.
I agree. So let's open this to the members of the public that are interested in commenting on this also. I know there's two of you back there.
Well, and maybe, Mr. Chairman, we could ask biologist Lackey to stay
there. You can stay right there, Carl, please.
Because they can, there's more than one.
There's three chairs, yeah. Now, that way you won't have to move back and forth.
John Valley, Carson City. Sorry for coming in late. I had a bunch of run around to do. I was at the Mule Deer Foundation meeting or banquet this weekend, and they threw out some numbers, and they just kind of, I didn't catch all your numbers, but I'll be happy to discuss later how accurate they were because it was a little eye-opening. But after that meeting, I came out thinking they said that they figure that there's about 500 deer living in town, and I don't know if that's correct or not, but that's an awful lot of deer, and I know they move up and down the ridge. But I would like to, you know, if the herds are stable on that, I want to, you know, I don't have any problem with recommending or asking that there be as many opportunities as possible for people to hunt. The price of gas isn't getting cheaper, and this is a place where people can get access to those animals. And if the herd's healthy and they're doing well and stuff, I would be in favor of larger numbers, but not so much to bring the herd back down and do any damage to the herd. I don't want to do that.
A question for Mr. Valley. You're saying larger numbers. Are you talking about across the board or just in our archery and muzzleloader?
Wherever it can be sustained. I don't, if you can, you know, if 80 is the number for archery, then you also have to tweak your non-resident. If you move up archery, you're going to have to tweak the non-resident archery tags up. So, I mean, you just got to look at that magic number. You know, Carl's got the stuff. I'm an archer, so I like archery opportunity. There's no question about it. I like muzzleloader opportunity. But when forced to, I'll hunt with any legal weapon also. So I just like archery because I think it's a good time of the year. What was your percentages for the late hunt archery? I'm sorry. You said it what it was.
Percentage of what?
Success.
Hunter success? Right here. Hunter success, late season 192 is only 16%.
Last year.
But, let's see. Yeah, of 20 tags late season, three people harvested. But hunter choice may come into that, you know. People may look at that and say, no, I've waited a long time for this tag. I'm not going to shoot that 4 point. I want a 30-inch 4 point. So it's not to say they couldn't have harvested. They just didn't.
Just get that big one and leave the governor's mansion. We'd have been all right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And as to his question about the in-town deer, don't count them, don't survey them. It's hard to say. But I can tell you that as and this happens all over the place, as our neighborhoods mature and all the plants and all the trees that we've planted over the years, as those things mature, 20 years ago, they didn't offer much in the way of wildlife cover and food. Those plants have all matured. Now there's a lot of cover and a lot more food for those animals, and you tend to see more animals of all species coming and utilizing these mature neighborhoods.
Carl, I wasn't aware that your population estimate didn't include the in-town deer.
No, we don't survey them.
I've had the same five deer go through my yard every day for the last 5 years. That population's maintained.
And those deer do move in a little bit, you know, on the peripheral. They do move in and out a little bit. But if they happen to be up on the mountain on the day we survey, then they're counted. But I think the majority of them are probably pretty happy down in town, and they stay here.
I'm on Arrowhead. I'm not even in town. But I have an apple tree.
Yeah.
Mr. Davis, would you like to speak again, please?
Jim Davis, once again with the Clear Creek Bowman. And if the herds are stable and the rifle tags are going up, I am in favor of increased opportunity for everyone. And you know, I know we have to go with what biologists recommend, or at least consider it. But it just seems like there are a lot of deer in town and that aren't counted. And if we increase the herd, if we increase the quota, that it really wouldn't affect, especially if we don't count those deer in town. I'm just for more opportunity for everyone. And thank you.
Jim, before you leave, you were concerned about why the herd or the recommendation for quotas for archery goes down. After listening to the conversation here, do you understand why it goes down? Do you have any questions for Carl? This is your chance.
No, I understand what he's saying now. And, you know, I was coming to the meetings when the demand success was implemented, and my thoughts on that were if rifle tags went up, archery tags would go up. And I was a little confused on the demand part of that. I was under the impression if rifle tags went up, archery tags are automatically going to go up, but it doesn't seem to be the case. So, but I'm perfectly satisfied with Carl's explanation.
Great. Question, Carl. I'm looking at 2017 harvest information, which includes the number of applications, and there were 38 applications for 20 tags. If that went up to 60 or 100, that would show you there's a higher demand for archery. And so that would actually increase that would be part of the answer of increasing the number of archery tags, wouldn't it?
Well, yes, unless it was really high success.
Right. Well, I know, but if you had the quota still low, I mean, if the quota was still 20, but you had 100 applicants, that shows you you have a high demand. And maybe with just showing 40 applicants is showing not as high demand. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Right. No, right. So I'm going to just suggest to you, Mr. Davis, that you got five choices to apply for.
That's what I was going to ask. Does it matter if it's a first choice?
It doesn't matter if it's a first choice. It just matters that somebody has a choice of.
Demand is based on first choice applicants.
Oh, first choice only. Okay.
First choice applicants, yes.
Yeah, Carl, your mic's off, but that's okay.
Okay.
All right. Demand so it's got to be first choice.
Yeah, yeah, demand is based on first choice.
You Clear Creek Bowman aren't willing to give up your first choice for 192 is what I'm hearing. All right.
Well, thank you.
So despite the fact that Clear Creek Bowman won't put it as their first choice, I will make a motion, Mr. Chairman, and I would like to make a motion that all of the quotas for 192, 194, and 291 be reflective of the rifle quota, and that they should be no less. They should be equal to or no less than what they were last year. I do notice that 291 actually has an increase of one. Is that correct, Carl?
I don't have it in front of me right now, but.
Oh, I do.
Yeah, I think we kept them pretty much the same.
But it increased one in archery in 291. So really the only ones that are proposed to go downward are 194 early and 192 early. And so therefore my motion is to make the 192 and the 194 archery tag quotas equal to the number that they were last year, which was 20 in 192 and 15 in 194. And actually, they proposed 15 in 194. Yeah. So really, the only motion then is to make the 192 early 20. And then I believe that the muzzleloader tags are proposed to go down in 192 also. Last year it was, last year it was 15 muzzleloader tags last year, and this year the proposal for muzzleloader tags is 10. So I propose that be 15. So, with all that said, let me clarify my motion. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move that in Area 192, the archery tags be increased to 20, and that the muzzleloader tags be increased to 15. That's a lot simpler, isn't it, Tamar?
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Motion passes.
Nice. And thank you, Carl.
Thank you very much.
That. And Carl, you're still how many years of collaring study are you planning on this herd?
Well, Cody Schroeder is a PhD candidate with that data. And he's trying to finish that up. We haven't collared any deer, I believe, in at least in the Carson range in probably 3 years, maybe four. But some of those deer still have the collars on them, although I doubt they're active. But that'd be a question for Cody. But he is finishing it up. PhD, I'm not sure when he's planning on defending his dissertation, but I would imagine it'd be coming up within the year or less.
Okay, and while I've got you here, for all of us, how last year was an excellent water year. This year we had a great March. How's the habitat looking?
The habitat's looking good. And like I said, the spring rains are what really do, you know, spring rains, precipitation this time of year through, let's say, June and July is what really, really benefits deer. But, yeah, the habitat has been looking really, really good.
And I know in the past you've mentioned that we've even seen triplets being born. Are triplets an indicator of animal health, or is it just what is triplets an indicator of? Is it habitat? Is it nutrition? Is it the health of the animal?
We're still talking mule deer, right?
Yes.
Okay. Right. I'd be taking a guess. I mean, obviously, if you saw a lot of triplets, that may indicate, you know, that the females are in really good shape, really fit shape. But with mule deer, that'd be a question for somebody else, like Cody or somebody like that. But now recruitment of those animals is definitely an indicator of good habitat conditions, and the survival and the recruitment into the population is an indicator of real good habitat conditions for mule deer. But as far as how many are born, I don't know.
And then my last question, and then I'll have a statement. My last question is regarding predators in the area. Are you seeing an increase, decrease? Do you see predators in this area as affecting that 1,400 number?
No, we don't see predators as an issue on this deer herd. I mean, the deer herd is stable. The habitat is in good condition. And as long as the habitat's in good condition, those animals are going to thrive. They're going to be able to avoid predators. It's not going to be a additive mortality, if you will, on the deer population. Mountain lions are here. Bears are here. Mountain lions kill and eat deer. But, no, it's not having an effect on the mule deer population. Now, if you saw habitat conditions really take a dive for a few years, and the deer population started taking a dive, then in certain areas, yeah, the predator can have an effect. Called a predator pit is what it's called ecologically, but no, we're not seeing that here.
So my comment and is, Carl, you have served this area extremely well, and you're a very appreciated person, and I want to thank you personally for everything you do. So thank you.
Thank you, sir.
I think we all feel that way. I know I do. Okay. Item number 10 is discussion of regarding a non-regulatory agenda items for the May 4th and 5th Nevada Board of Wildlife Commissioners meeting, which will be in Reno. Do we have any comments on that?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to pull one item and discuss it, and this board may want to make some recommendation to the commission on it, and that mm-hmm. is the petition that Federal Premium Ammunition is making regarding a proposed change to the NAC regarding types of weapons and shot that can be used for wild turkey hunts.
Mm-hmm. Member Martin, what item is that on the agenda? Not our agenda, but
it's number 6 under on the Endow agenda.
Okay, thank you.
On Friday. Did you find it?
No, but I'll go there.
Okay. Would you like to go ahead and make your comments?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I read this, and 410s are a marginal, have been a marginal hunting. Well, the state of Nevada has said that they are not adequate enough shotgun to go turkey hunting. I read the petition, the background information, and I know that Federal has come up with a new tungsten-based shot, which has a density that's higher than steel, higher than lead. It's being marketed by Federal as all the way down to a 410 as a turkey load. And I did watch a video of a gentleman killing a turkey at approximately 35 yards, he said, with a 410 with this ammunition. And so those are all the good things and expanding opportunity. But where I'm concerned about this is almost a regulation that's written for Federal premium ammunition, and I don't know that 410 shotguns are prohibiting a lot of people from being able to hunt turkeys. And by saying it's maybe written just for Federal, it says that the NAC would be amended to add an item, is what Federal is proposing. And the current regulation says that for hunting wild turkeys, no weapon other than a shotgun which is no larger than a 10 nor smaller than a 20 gauge and uses a shot size no larger than a 2 pellet or a bow and arrow may be used. And they're proposing to add another item that says, or a shotgun which is a 410 or a 28 gauge and uses non-toxic shot size no larger than number 6 pellets with a density of 15 grams per cubic centimeter or higher. I certainly understand density, and I know that mercury is more dense than water, and I know that watching what they have with tungsten and reading their background information, their tungsten shot has a density of 18 grams per cubic centimeter for the 410 and the 28 gauge. But looking at the literature, I don't know that anybody else has something that's that dense at this particular time. And I'm not married that this is a bad thing or a good thing. I'm just wondering the need. And I don't know how many people are being precluded from hunting turkeys because they'll only hunt with a 410. So I just wanted to bring it up and see if there's any discussion here or in the public.
I know we did a lot of some joking and kidding around about it, but what I didn't like about this was because I really don't like it's showing favoritism to one company at the moment. And I don't like that aspect. I think if there were more than one company providing that, because I also don't think that the hunters are going to discriminate as closely as they should, other than just shooting with a 410. I don't think necessarily that they would be out there making sure they had the right shot.
Well, see, and that's my point is, you know, it's interesting because this then becomes a law enforcement issue because it says you can use a 410 if the density is 15 grams per cubic centimeter or higher. And so what's it going to say on the shell, density greater than 15 grams per cubic centimeter?
I doubt it.
I don't know. And before I get wrapped up anymore, I'm wondering if any of the hunters in the group think that this 410 thing is a real issue or not. I don't know if there's anybody in the public who has a comment. John, you always have an opinion. Do you have anything to say about this one?
While he's thinking about it, C.K. Bailey for the record. Tungsten, heavier than lead, and so it's obviously a lot cleaner than lead, and it's a lot cleaner than steel, and it doesn't rust. And it doesn't hurt the environment and all this stuff. I guess I'm looking at the aspect that they're going to tungsten, which is being mined out and stuff like that. What other than the possibility of it hitting the target with more impact, quote unquote, than steel shot or lead, is what's so good about it? And how does your barrel being affected by the use of tungsten?
CK's comment about the barrels, you know, tungsten is, if I decide to hunt duck or turkey, I don't have an insert or in my or barrels that will withstand steel shot. So the only thing I can do if I want to use my older shotguns is to go with tungsten, for it won't damage the barrel. And so maybe there's a group of hunters that are in the same situation that I am, that they don't feel like going out and changing over or buying new shotguns just because you can't use, you know, lead shot anymore. And the only alternative that I have is to use something like tungsten. And so I really don't know the answer. I think that environmentally, yeah, it's better than lead. Definitely better than lead. And that was the whole push behind, you know, going away from lead because of the environmental situations. And I think that, you know, in the interest of the environment, tungsten's great. Now, the question, does the monopoly that one manufacturer will have, well, if I was in business selling shotgun shells and I'd see my competitor coming out with this and saying, well, here's another class of hunters that may not have wanted to hunt anymore, but now they, you know, 410's a lot lighter than a 12-gauge. So maybe that's the impetus for getting other people into the business when they see Federal walking away with all this sales that they can't compete with. I know what marketing is all about, and, you know, remember Martin says, you know, these guys have the lock on the market. This thing is written for them.
But on the other hand, I will say that the number of people who want to hunt with a turkey with a 410 is so minimal that small market share is not going to make them billionaires. And also, you know, I am a shooter of Blackhorn, and we did have to make a special rule that allowed Blackhorn to be used as a muzzleloader propellant. Right. And they have a monopoly on that. I don't have a problem with that. And I guess I don't have a problem with this regulation, really, Mr. Chairman. I just thought we should have a discussion about it.
Yeah, and I think this is the kind of thing that they are going to have some time spent on this Friday, too. Like I said, I agree with everything that's being said on both sides. And we still have more public out here coming up, because I do think the market is going to be extremely small, but I don't like regulations that cater to one company.
Well, is tungsten more expensive, quote unquote, than steel? Yes. Well, that, you know, that comes in the market play too. So thank you for answering my question. I got a little education here. So I didn't know that tungsten was perhaps better on a barrel than steel. So I learned something really big tonight. Thank you.
John Valley, Carson City. My boss in the summertime, his daughter shoots turkeys with 410s back in Minnesota. He's using lead, but tungsten does just as good a job. Steel could do just as good a job if its speeds are up. There are three companies that make tungsten right now available. I don't know if they're making it in 410, but Kent, Rio, and Federal are all using tungsten and bismuth in some form. So there are more than one company out there. I just don't know if it's in the same caliber. But he uses the 410 because his daughters can carry that firearm into the woods by themselves safely. He doesn't have to carry it for them. They're going in a couple miles, and they can get the job done. And right now they're 3 for 3 last week with the turkeys with the girls. So a 410 can harvest the turkey. Thank you.
Yeah, that enlightens me some too. Thank you very much. No further comment on number 6?
So, is there a motion on the table with regards to supporting the...
No. We're silent on it, just as we would have been if we hadn't had this discussion. Good luck to the commission on this one.
Yeah. Yeah. They will make some people happy. Okay, we're up to possible action on discussion, possible action. Oh, we did that. Future agenda items. Do we have future agenda items? Gentlemen? Any public comment at this point before we move for adjournment?
Well, when
we got representation at the meeting.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, who's going to this?
How
meeting?
Did I skip that? I intend to be at the meeting on both days. Would anybody else like to join me? I could probably be talked into buying a cheap lunch.
Mr. Chairman, I believe I could make Saturday's meeting. So.
And he's buying cheap lunch.
That's all we could. Somebody else buys lunch.
Did you get... Is that itemized? Okay. Okay, public comment. Now we're up to public comment. Any closing comments from the public?
Well, I'm going to solicit a public comment.
Okay.
From Mr. Valley, who is a current walker and a frequent walker going up to Hobart. Mr. Valley, could you give us a status of the trail going up to Hobart as of probably this week?
John Valley, Carson City, not this week, but last week. The gates closed again. It was opened about 3 weeks ago, and I don't know if they were doing any work up there, but the gate was opened at the trailhead for the Ash to Kings Canyon bike path, the multi-use path, I should say. The gate was open. There was a vehicle up parked up high, but due to about 2.5 feet of snow on that north face, as you head up above Lakeview, they were pretty much stymied at that point. A couple of ATVs had tried to make it up there and just got stuck and turned around. It is locked as of Saturday. I did not walk up that road Saturday, but it is locked again. It is closed and locked. And then I just walked the face of the mountain. But the road's in good shape. It still needs some work. And I don't know if they're doing any more work proposed from the last landing, which overlooks Carson City to the east, up above Lakeview, and then on the way up that still had snow, and they had a track hoe up there based on, you know, tracks, but they didn't do any work because of the snow, I'm assuming. And they hadn't touched the road. The road at Kings Canyon that goes east or north through the Green Gate by the water structure, they've got 6 inches of road base all the way up to the Forest Service line right now. You could drive a Cadillac up there with traction. It's amazing. But it definitely stopped right at the sign for the wilderness area. But that's all I have. The road up Kings Canyon, the old road that goes up over to Spooner, is still torn up very badly. They're in need of probably some type of work to keep the creek is flowing into the road right now, and that's the problem. And people are just they're going up there in their rigs and stuff, and they're tearing it up. So that was as of Wednesday last week. And it's still tore up pretty bad, but people are starting to use it. Weather turned good, and everybody got out and got in their vehicles and started running around. So they are using it, but that's something maybe that needs to go to the city. I'm sure they're aware of it. But and there's people camping up there in old Borders property on the ridge and the sheep around the hill, of course. So they're up there. But they haven't done any more work on the road that I can tell except Kings Canyon, going north through the Green Gate, through the water meter, and then going up that ridge to the loop, to the waterfall loop. That is paved and two cars wide right now. Anything else? Thanks.
Thank you. We appreciate all the comments tonight, and it's been very informative for myself. So do I have a motion for adjournment?
So move.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion passes. Thank you very much. Have a good evening.